The lesson I've been asked to address is taken from James chapter 4, specifically verse 11, but to keep it in context, we'll be looking at various aspects of this book. Specific things that I was asked to comment on have to do with, in verse 11 of James 4, speak not evil one of another. What would speaking evil of a brother or sister look like? Or maybe we should say sound like. How do we avoid it, even by accident? Is it possible to do this by accident, to speak evil? Is gossiping about someone speaking evil of them? Is there a difference between the two? Is talking about something a brother or sister is doing that you don't approve of speaking evil of them? How can we watch out for our brothers and sisters and yet avoid being critical of them? That, in essence, is kind of the tone or the tenor of the assignment that I was given. In James chapter 4, verse 11, we have the 10th of what is often called the 10 commandments of James. James chapter 4, verse 7 through the first part of verse 11 give us 10 very short, pithy commandments as to our conduct and as to our thinking. James is one of my favorite books because he is very practical. He moves very rapidly from point to point. It's structured much like the Sermon on the Mount. It's about exactly the same length as the Sermon on the Mount, and it's very practical, like the Sermon on the Mount. But what does James have in mind when he says, speak not evil one of another, brethren? In sports, there's a term that probably most all of you have participated in some form or been the recipient of. It's called trash talk. Someone shoots the basketball and it misses everything, and for 10 or 15 seconds, all you can hear is air ball. Or somebody comes up to bat, and all you can hear is the other team yell, easy out, easy out. Probably it's good that we don't hear much of the trash talk that transpires, at least in professional sports. But trash talk is not confined just to sports. It exists in life. It exists in school. It exists in the workplace. And it can and does exist in the church. Sometimes it's just good-natured kidding and jesting back and forth that I think even has a healthy place, even amongst Christians. But sometimes it can go beyond that. And it appears to me that here, as James is addressing the concept of speaking evil one of another, he is simply summarizing something that has been building to this crescendo throughout his book. Most of you are familiar enough with this book to know that the third chapter spends quite a bit of time on the tongue. When he gets to chapter 4 of James, verses 1 and 2, it says, from whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence even of your lust that war in your members? You lust and you have not. You kill and desire to have. There was a turmoil, a conflict. And as I go through the book of James, I think it was their speech or their conduct of talking about one another that was largely responsible for the stress that James senses in the congregations and in the Christians that he is writing to. In verses 1 through 6 of this fourth chapter, he gives us the cause for much of this difficulty, and it's selfishness, it's pride. He gives us in verse 7 through 10 one of the great cures for this, humility. And then he gets to verse 11 and says, now don't speak evil one of another. I will probably repeat this phrase several times in the short time I'm up here. But I do believe that speaking evil one of another is not the same as speaking of their evil. There are times when we need to speak of evil in each other, to help exhort and build one another up. And it need not necessarily be speaking evil, but speaking of the evil that needs to be addressed. James restates the basic problem as he goes through particularly chapters 3 and 4. The misuse of the tongue to speak evil or to slander a brother or sister. Really, the essence of speaking evil, as I understand it here in verse 11, is you are speaking erroneously and you are speaking maliciously. That is not the only things we need to refrain from, but I think that is the heart of what James is getting to here. Speaking evil, as he refers to it here in verse 11, is the result of arrogant boasting. He talks about that in chapter 3, verse 5. It's the result of jealousy that he talks about in chapter 3, verses 14, 15, and 16. It's the result of self-centeredness or self-focus that we find in the first few verses of chapter 4. It's the result of pride that we see in James chapter 4, verse 6. And such conduct is not only condemned in James, it is not only condemned in the New Testament, it is condemned also in the Old Testament. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16, Psalms 50, verse 20. In the New Testament, Paul in Romans chapter 1, verse 30, warns about being backbiters, backstabbers, maybe is easy for us to understand. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 20. We're warned against jealousy, wrath, selfish ambitions, backbiting, whisperers, conceits, and turmoil. Peter, writing in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, tells us to lay aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking. And James says here in verse 11 that if you do that, if you speak evil one of another, you judge the law. Now, how does speaking evil one of another cause us to judge the law? Well, the law said, don't do it. Leviticus chapter 19, verses 16 and 18 and other places. So when we do it, James is saying you are contradicting the law that has been given to us. You are not only contradicting the Old Testament law, you are contradicting the concept that Jesus said of love your neighbors. Those who inappropriately speak of their brother break God's law and therefore show contempt for God. If I speak evil of you in a slanderous or malicious way, I am showing contempt for God because I'm saying, I'm not going to do it the way you say, God. I'm going to do it the way I feel that I should do it. And Paul in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 says, do away with this kind of talk. Someone has said, and I don't know that this is certainly always the case, that the church is one of the few armies that shoots its own wounded. And we need to be quite careful of that. It may not be that bad, but usually when we injure one another, our weapons of choice are words. That old saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me is just plumb stupid. I'd rather be hit with a stick and a stone than words. And most of you probably would not like to have to choose, but you would probably say so also. In verse 11 of James chapter 4, the term brother or brethren is used three times from the Greek word adolphos. Speak evil, the term comes from the Greek word katalio. It means to be a traducer, to slander, to speak against, to say that which is untrue or in a malicious intent. And therefore it carries the idea of backbiting. The concept of judge or judging in verses 11 and 12 is found five times from the Greek word krino. And it means to evaluate, to distinguish, to try. Here it carries the idea of to condemn in a negative way. James is teaching us that slander, malicious untruths, is one of Satan's great tools. What are we told in Revelations 12 and 10? That Satan is the accuser of the brethren. He's not interested in the truth. He's not interested in our well-being. The command in verse 11 is a continuation of the warning that we see in verses 1 and 2 and following in this fourth chapter. Against wars and fightings. I've been very fortunate, and therefore maybe you have too, that I haven't seen as many church fights that have caused splits of congregation as maybe in some eras of time prior to my being alive. But when I have seen it, it is usually, not always, but it's usually not a doctrinal issue. It is clothed in doctrine, but when you pull all of that away, somebody is upset or jealous or mad at somebody else. Well, they can't say, I'm upset, jealous, and mad at you, and therefore I'm leaving, so that they find some doctrinal cloak to put around it, but usually it's a personality issue. Webster defines this concept as a false tale or report maliciously uttered and tending to injure the reputation of another by lessening him in the esteem of his fellow citizens. And again, I repeat, speaking of their evil is not the same as speaking evil. The idea of judging is not always a negative concept. I'm well aware of Matthew 7 and 1, judge not, lest you be judged. But I understand that to be an indication that before we judge, we need to start by judging ourselves. Get that mote out of our eye. Because Jesus then says in John 7 and 24 that we can execute righteous judgment. There are simply some things as a Christian, as a human being, we cannot do that God asks us to do without making some judgments. But we need to make sure that when we do, it is righteous judgment. That's the kind that Jesus, that's the kind that Paul commands us to keep. Unrighteous judgment is condemnation. It's the kind of church trash talking that James is addressing here. How do we distinguish between righteous judgment and unrighteous judgment? Well, there are multiple ways, but let me just give you one or two that occur to me. Righteous judgment talks to the person. Unrighteous judgment talks about the person. And there is a world of difference. And the latter is far, far easier for us to do than the former. It's not better, but it is far easier for me to talk about you when it's something of a problem than it is to go and talk to you. Even though I fully know what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 18, go to that person and talk to them. If you see a fault in me, if you see a sin in me, and you come and talk to me, that is not evil speaking, that is love if you do it in the right attitude. If you don't come and talk to me, not only is that evil, but it's unloving. As James is addressing this issue, it seems that that was not what was happening. They were going to other people, maybe speaking behind their backs, maybe they were untruths, they were malicious in their intent. And the Bible calls that slander and gossip. And it's wrong. It is wrong. When we are talking about a situation with somebody who is neither part of the problem nor part of the solution, we're probably gossiping. If you need to talk to somebody about a problem, talk to somebody who is either involved in the problem or can be helpful in the solution, not someone that just will listen to you as you propagate your righteousness. I believe evil speaking can be achieved. Achieved is not the right word. Can be done in two ways, either in its content, if what we're saying is untrue, or in its manner, if what we're saying is unloving. I could say something about you that is absolutely true, and it would still be evil speaking if I do it with the wrong attitude. I could say in the most loving way something about you that's false, and that would be evil speaking. I might be doing it by accident, but that we'll talk about that in a moment. Slander tends toward untruths, or at least slanting of the truths. We are to be discerning about one another's teaching. And that is not contextually evil speaking. To discern what is true and not true, and to discern what you hear at this weekend or any other time, that's not necessarily evil speaking if you go away and say, well, I don't think John was right when he said that. Now, you need to come to me, according to Matthew, but that's not evil speaking. That's just simply being discerning. And we can't guard against false teaching without being discerning. And it is not necessarily evil speaking to evaluate spiritual maturity or doctrinal views in the church. Let me give you a personal example that happens to me with some regularity, and it's happened to some of you. But I'll just use Vandalia and Greg as an example, but he hasn't done that, or he hasn't asked me that. It's not something he'd do that was wrong. Let's say Vandalia is planning their meeting for next year, and Greg comes to me and says, we're thinking about using this brother as a speaker next year. What do you think? Well, he's asked me for my input. Well, when that happens, it seems to me like I have, or you, if it comes to you, have four options. One would be to say, I don't know the person, so I don't have an opinion. One would be to say, they're excellent. I really recommend them. Now, those are the two I like, because I just feel good about either one of those. But what if I would think, well, I really don't want to say, because that might be evil speaking of somebody. Or I could say, well, I've got some reservations about it, and I don't know that I'd recommend you use that person. Now, again, this has not happened. This is the hypothetical. Well, it has happened, but not in Vandalia. What do? Somebody asks you for your honest opinion. Is that speaking evil? Let's say the person I'm asked about really maybe isn't quite, in my opinion, ready for that subject or ready for whatever. Is it evil speaking for me to tell Greg, I'm not sure I'd do that? I don't think that is necessarily evil speaking if I do it with a loving attitude. And I've had to make that assessment and share it with brothers. Sometimes they listen to me, sometimes they don't. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. So you do the best you can. But sometimes there is an element of honesty that needs to be. When we're selecting leaders in the church, is it evil speaking to say, I don't think that man's ready for it? I don't think he's qualified? No, that's not necessarily evil speaking. It has to be done in love. But when we apply God's standards to a situation, we're not making the judgment. God's making the judgment. We're just applying his judgment to it. But a motive of jealousy, bitterness, selfish ambition, etc., rather than the motive of building up the person and building up the body, that is evil speaking, irregardless of its content. And I think each one of us can help stop evil speaking and trash talk. When someone comes to you with evil speaking, I use the term trash talk about somebody else, maybe three or four or five questions we could ask them might turn it into a better position. Ask the person, what's your reason for telling me this? Why are you telling me this? Where did you get your information from about this situation? making them go back and evaluate, do they really have the facts or not? Have you gone and spoken to the person directly before you came to talk to me about it? That's what it says to do in Matthew 18. Have you personally verified that what you're saying is true about this individual? The fifth one that I jotted down here, I think, is really the stopper. Ask the person, can I quote you when I go to talk to this person or to the elders about this? You ought to talk about slowing things down real quick. But I think that's a legitimate question. If I come to you and say, this guy's doing things he shouldn't be doing, and I'm not willing for you to quote me on that, then you should question my motive or the content of my facts. Christians are not just permitted to exercise right judgment. They're commanded to do it. But you know, sometimes our communications get all garbled and we don't do a very good job. Steve Cole tells a story of two old ladies that shared a house. And it was a nice spring, summer day. And they were sitting out on the porch. One old lady was listening to the crickets chirping. And she thought, that is just absolutely beautiful. And I would agree, except when I'm trying to go to sleep. The other lady was listening to a church meeting just half a block down the road, and they were singing. And she thought, that is beautiful. Well, as they were sitting there, the one listening to the crickets chirp says, the one listening to the church music says, isn't that beautiful? The one listening to the crickets says, it sure is. And I understand they do that by rubbing their legs together. A total miscommunication. A little humorous. Not evil speaking. But it holds how much we need to keep our facts together. Righteous judgment almost always sacrifice self for the benefit of somebody else. Unrighteous judgment often diminishes the other person in order to exalt self. And that's about as good a definition as I've ever found. Evil speaking tears down somebody to make us feel better, whereas righteous judgment is to build up that person to make them better, even if it means it's hard for us to do. Evil speaking has an attitude. If I can just make the other person look a little less spiritual, then I'll look more spiritual by comparison. Well, you and I don't become more or less spiritual by comparing ourselves one to another. We become more or less spiritual by comparing us to Christ. And Paul describes a better way, doesn't he, in Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. Ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. But we are not to turn a blind eye to wrong. Living in an overly tolerant society, we often find ourselves maybe in overly tolerant congregations. The Corinthians found themselves in that situation. Paul had to correct it. I know James is not saying don't go to somebody and address a problem, because in James chapter 5, verse 20, at the end of the book, he says, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his sin will save him soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Frankly, the easiest thing to do is not to address a wrong that you see in a brother or sister. That is the absolutely easiest thing to do. And since it's the easiest thing to do, it's the one we often go to. It takes guts, it takes prayer, and it takes a lot of love to go to somebody and talk to them about something that concerns you about their life. And it takes a lot of strength
to accept it if somebody comes to you. You know, we always tend to think of, we're the one going to go straighten somebody out. You remember, probably more times than not, we're the ones that somebody needs to come and straighten us out. And our attitude toward them when they come is going to determine how well that goes. We are wonders at rationalizing how we shouldn't do that. It makes more sense for somebody else to go. It's the elder's job to do this. Someone else would be better to talk to them. It's not my place. And on and on and on it goes. But the Bible says that we are to care one for another. Not with evil speaking. William Cowper said, "He that slanders me paints me blacker than I am. He that flatters me paints me whiter than I am." Is it possible to speak evil by accident? Yes, I think it is, if we don't have our facts straight. It's not acceptable, but it is possible. Is talking about something a brother or sister is doing that you don't approve of, speaking evil of them? Well, that will depend, number one, on your motive for saying it, and on number two, who you're saying it to. If your motive is to build the person up and you go to that person, as the Bible tells us to do, then that's not evil speaking. If our motive is not that, or we go to others rather than to the person, then I think we have a problem. As I quit, you know, there are sometimes difficult and embarrassing things that we don't like to hear, but we're awful glad we hear them. And I hope this isn't irreverent. But if you walked out of here or came in to sit down this afternoon and you'd been to the restroom and you had toilet tissue stuck to the bottom of your shoe and you were dragging about 10 feet of toilet paper and someone mentioned it to you, would you be glad or sad or upset with them? You'd be a little embarrassed maybe, but I'd a lot rather get it taken care of than come up here with it. Now that is a physical example. But we're thankful when somebody points things like that out to us. Should we not be even more thankful if they point out salvational or spiritual things to us? When someone comes to us, we need to consider the value of the source. We need to listen. And then we need to analyze the validity of, is it true? I believe we can learn more from criticism than we can from flattery. We don't like it as well, but I can remember almost every, well, no, there's been too many of them, but I can remember many criticisms that I've gotten, much more than compliments, because I think the person that's done it has probably given it more thought than the person who just offhand says, oh, that was wonderful, when I probably knew it wasn't. But look for common themes. If you get the same comment from multiple people, maybe there's some validity to it. And criticism deserves an answer. But oftentimes we take the other approach. We find fault with the critic. We blame others rather than taking responsibility. We start criticizing others to deflect your criticism. Well, you think I'm bad. Look at them. They're worse. Well, they may or may not be, but that's irrelevant. Ignoring the opportunity to learn. Criticism can be a painfully wonderful learning experience. But too many times we do what I would call we pocket veto it. And we don't learn from it. James says here, speak not evil one of another. I believe the issue revolves around, number one, whether the context of what we are speaking is true or not, and the motive and attitude behind it with which we speak. To point out, as brothers and sisters in the Lord, things that we need to work on is a very loving thing to do, if it's done with love. An unloving thing would be not to point it out. If you have a, and I hope you do, and if you don't, get one. If you have a brother or sister in the Lord who loves your soul more than your feelings, you cherish them. You cherish them. And if they come to you, you respond in a way that will make them willing to come if they have to come on another issue. It's hard to be honest one with another in a loving way. They were having trouble with it apparently, and that's why James mentions it. Not just in verse 11, but throughout the whole book, there's this tension that is in this wonderfully practical book. James is not a book of theology, it's a book of practical living. And one of the practical livings is to use our tongue right to edify one another and not use it wrongly to tear down one another. We'll close our thoughts, extend the gospel invitation. I used this illustration this morning at Dean Avenue, but if John and Donna will indulge me, it kind of goes a little bit along with Jeremy's talk. I thought about bringing a $100 bill in here, but I didn't for more than one reason. But this is my $100 bill. Would you like to have the $100? Well, you can say yes or you can lie. But now I wad it up and I put it on the floor and I stomp on it and I go like this. And then I pick it up and it's all scrumpled up and dirty. And then I say, would you like to have this $100 bill? Your answer is still yes. Why? Because you can unfold it, you can brush it off, and it still has value. I don't know your situation, but maybe in your life you've gotten all crumpled up. You've got all stomped on. You've gotten dirty. God knows you're still valuable. And you can be dusted off. And that's what the invitation is all about, as we stand and as we sing.